Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We think the very bright days are ahead of us, and we look forward to enjoying them. But in terms of feeling like we've accomplished something or being satisfied, ask me after the parade.
That quote's going to be kept on file for a long time. Expectations set by White Sox GM Rick Hahn.
It should put the pressure on him. I kind of like it. It's kind of what Tim Anderson said. You know, why can't I be an MVP?
Mm-hmm.
It puts the onus on that player, or in this case, the general manager, to follow through on that.
Yeah.
So, feels good. Feels good you're putting yourself in that stratosphere. You're not thinking small. Think big.
Right. That hasn't blown up for any Chicago team over the last year.
It doesn't serve you to play small. It doesn't serve anybody for you to play small.
Yeah.
Let's go. If you want to be a champion, you got to talk like a champion.
That's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We are here with you until noon, and right now we're going to go out to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. It's a lot of White Sox news to talk about, so let's bring in James Fox. He's a senior editor at Future Sox. Follow him on Twitter at JamesFox917. James, how are you doing, man?
Hey, fellas. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I guess right off the top, we have the news of the Vera signing, and the Sox are doing other things to try and prepare for the July 2nd international signing date. What news do you have, and just what info can you give everybody on what they've been doing lately?
Yeah, so, I mean, I had heard that they were in the marketplace for some of these, like, older Cuban prospects, which isn't a big surprise just because, like, that's, you know, how they typically operate. So the international market, it's very strange, and a lot of people, like, don't really have a grasp on how it's handled. But so teams are basically put in three tiers for July 2nd. There's the big market clubs, the mid-market clubs, and then the small market clubs. And the White Sox, regardless of how they operate, are in with the big market clubs. So last year they had, you know, just over like $5.4 million to spend. This year those figures aren't out yet, but it should be like a little bit of an increase over that. So, you know, yesterday the news came out that they've reached agreement with 6'4" Cuban right-handed pitcher Jorge Vera, which is a pretty significant signing. I mean, he was listed as the top pitcher in the 2019 international class. So they're signing in the 2020 class that starts this coming July. So how he'll rank in that one, I don't know. Probably similar. A $1.5 million bonus is significant, but I actually thought he would get a little bit more. And then I know of, you know, almost $2 million in smaller signings that they already have committed. So, you know, there's rumors that they're interested in a bigger fish named Oscar Colas, who people have kind of nicknamed the Cuban Otani, which is, you know, a bit ridiculous. Like, he's not that good. It's just that he pitches and hits. So, you know, when they get mentioned, they usually get stuff like this done. So that's a good sign. I just don't know if they technically have the money in the pool to be able to get a guy like that. But I guess we'll see.
That's James Fox, managing editor of Southside Hitpen, and also senior editor of Future Sox. And if you guys don't know who he is, he's the guy who broke the news that Luis Robert was going to be signing an extension with the White Sox a month before everybody else had it, and a month before it actually happened. So kudos to James. Speaking of Future Sox, I heard this week is a big week for the site. Tell the folks what's going on this week.
Yeah, so this week's our rankings week at the website. We do it twice a year. Monday, you know, the system's pretty good still. So Monday we're going to have a list of 15 to 20 names that didn't make our top 30. So we'll have an article for that tomorrow. And then, you know, 16 through 30 on Tuesday, the full list on Wednesday, followed by later in the week we have like a mailbag and a writer's roundtable. And then for Patreon subscribers all week, we will release our individual list as well. So seven of us kind of put a top 30 together, aggregate it to make the final list, but we're going to give Patreon subscribers like access to our original lists, and then, you know, with write-ups on there too. So yeah, it's a pretty big week for us, and you know, publications are releasing their top 30s everywhere. Baseball America has theirs. MLB Pipelines isn't out yet. But, you know, the White Sox, the back end of the White Sox top 30 is skewing a lot younger than it has in the past, which is, you know, a little bit promising, I think.
And just clear something for us, especially this year. Folks want to know about Michael Kopech. Do the White Sox gain an extra year by keeping him down for a certain amount of time this year?
They can. I'm not sure. It's kind of a while, though, I think. I think it would be like mid-May. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible. And I think, like, look, it's probably in the back of their minds, like, hey, we can get this extra year on Kopech. I personally think they'd start him in Charlotte anyway, and we've talked about this before, just to, like, if he's only going to throw four innings and start at the beginning of the year, you know, to kind of mess with the innings, you know, so they avoid a Steven Strasburg situation. Like, I think they would send him down anyway, but I'm not going to lie and say that, like, you know, in the back of their mind, they're not like, oh, we can get the year of control that we lost back because, you know, these teams just happen to do that. Now, I think if they brought him up, like something happens to Gio Gonzalez, they bring him up late April, you know, then we'll know they kind of don't care about that. But yeah, I think it is possible, but it's significant, and I don't have the date on hand, but it's later than people think it is.
And with the White Sox, I've always thought of them being kind of a reactive team instead of a proactive team. But last year they did some type of self-scouting. Hostetler got promoted, and I put those in quotes. Now, you wrote an article on Future Sox talking about the White Sox more working with the biomechanical part of the game for hitters and pitchers. Talk a little bit more about what the White Sox are doing, and it seems like a proactive move for a team that is always slow to get to the innovation.
So, yeah, it does seem it's a bit reactive still, and I think I tried to, you know, put that in the piece just at the fact that, like, look, teams have been doing this for a while. And the White Sox have two, but they've been paying, you know, consultants and stuff. And the guy, Ben Hansen, that they actually hired was like the vice president of Modus Technology. Like, I think they'd actually outsourced to him in the past. Well, now they hired him, which is good. So, you know, these changes aren't bad. Like, I've seen people complaining that, like, oh, they should have been doing this for the last 5 years. And that's true. They should have been. But they do have like a modern player development system finally, which is good, that runs from the top down. So the guy that's going to run their biomechanics, like, will work with their head of pitching development and their head of hitting development all the way down, as well as guys on the medical side to, you know, avoid injuries and stuff like that. So it's really good. I mean, it's, you know, we've been covering this stuff for years, and the White Sox have been one of those teams where it seems like a kid will come into the system and he'll have a hitting coach preaching them one way at low A, and then they'll get to high A and it's somebody else, and then they get to double A, and they've learned like a bunch of different ways. And then for all these years, they've wondered why they can't develop hitters. I mean, that, you know, it's very significant, and the changes are a big deal. Chris Getz is doing a pretty good job, and it's something that goes a little bit unnoticed, I think, because the guys at the top of the organization have stayed employed as long as they have through this thing.
Speaking with James Fox, senior editor of Future Sox here on The Score. Follow him on Twitter at JamesFox917. So the big date, maybe one of the more overrated dates on the calendar. We'll get to that a little bit later. But pitchers and catchers report this week. Is there anything you're looking for in the early part of camp before we really start to get into the meat of the spring training schedule, and just like something that listeners and observers can kind of keep an eye on while we're essentially just watching a lot of B-roll of people playing catch?
Yeah, early on's tough because, you know, you hear about the stories about how the guys are in the best shape of their life and, you know, all that stuff. I think everybody gets a little sick at spring training. Like, we're all going to be super excited, you know, this week and next week when we see all the players, but then probably in 2 weeks we're going to be like, okay, enough already. Like, let's get going with the games. I think the two of the bigger stories in this spring are going to be, you know, Nick Madrigal and like what happens at second base. I think just because, like, I don't think they're going to bring Nick Madrigal to Chicago, but he's probably the best option. And then, you know, you guys brought up Kopech. I think that's an issue too, just because, like, look, we know he's probably not going to start with the major league club. And while spring training stats should probably be taken with a grain of salt, like, if he's your best pitcher in the spring, like, it's going to be pretty tough to justify bringing him, you know, not bringing him north per se. So I would think those two things. And then Luis Robert is just, you know, a huge story too. Like, the fact that he's like going to be on the team, like, you're not going to be watching Luis Robert the first 2 weeks, like playing spring games with all of the regulars, knowing that he's inevitably going back to Charlotte at some point, like he's starting on the team. I think that that's pretty significant. And then I guess one last thing is how quickly these guys are there. Like, I think, you know, the majority of the hitters are all there already. So it's, you know, pitchers and catchers report. I think they'll have pretty close to their full squad, like immediately. I think it's what, the 17th when the Sox report. So I think you'll hear that story, the fact that, you know, they're in it, they're going to try to win this year, and like they're all excited and they're all there, led by, you know, probably Jose Abreu and the new addition of Yasmani Grandal.
One thing that I am constantly kind of fighting against is, as being a White Sox fan, the thought that we're the afterthought. We're kind of not even thought about sometimes in the 2005 World Series by national people. The disrespect happened last night again.
Yes, it did.
Now, I know that people generally don't know about Yoan Moncada. If you're not watching baseball, you're not a baseball fan, you probably wouldn't. But to not have him in their top 10 is egregious. It's a huge mistake because the guy, firstly, is 24, 25, and he's going to be a star. He's already a star this year. And to have Justin Turner, great player, ahead of him, and Manny Machado, who I love as a San Diego Padre, is my second team, in front of Yoan Moncada is not only, it's like fireable. Whoever's doing that, the shredder, put those in quotes, Brian Kenny, get my man Yoan Moncada some respect. Tell me about Yoan Moncada and what he projects to be this year and for his career.
Yes, I think you didn't even actually mention the most egregious one, which was McNeil and the Mets being on there, which is absolutely absurd. So what I will say is, I think, you know, the shredder, I think they do plug it into the computer, kind of like Pagoda. So I know, you know, people have talked about Pagoda projections all week and on your station as well. And the computer spits out, you know, stuff for Yoan Moncada, and we're underwhelmed by it. But I mean, Yoan Moncada was awesome last year, and I think Moncada is going to be better next year. I think he's an MVP candidate, like, going forward. But, you know, he did have that bad year the year before that. So when you're not dealing with people and you're dealing with computers, like, these are kind of like the median results that they spit out. And I think the shredder is similar. I agree with you. It's ridiculous. I mean, he even, whatever, put him at 9, put him at 10, whatever. Like, he deserves to be in the top 10 third baseman, but it, you know, kind of, you know, shows how silly all this stuff is when you can just like pull up stats and like prove that he belongs on there and he's not. I'm with you. I think Yoan Moncada is the best player on this team. Some people would say Yasmani Grandal. I still think he has, you know, the highest upside of anybody that they have, like, in the organization, just because, I mean, he missed time last year and was, you know, a mid fives war player. And I think there's a lot more in there, and he's, you know, not that he'll reach the ultimate ceiling, but even like his 80th percentile outcome is like a perennial all-star. So I'm right there with you, man. I think, you know, he's got to put up a couple of solid years in a row before he gets the recognition, especially playing on the south side of Chicago, as we know.
So what type of computer do they have out at MLB Network? Is it something running Windows 95, or is it like Windows 7 where it's not supported anymore, so it might have been bugged?
I don't know. Like, so I talked about it with some buddies the other day, and I said, you know, I didn't think Moncada would be on like the list that like the people do or whatever, you know, just cause like, yeah, White Sox, whatever.
Sure.
But I thought the shredder would have him for sure. Like, I, you know, I was kind of like, okay, like the computer will be more objective than the humans doing it that, you know, have typically like they haven't, you know, like they didn't watch Yoan Moncada last year. Like, you know, I mean, James Fegan put him on his MVP ballot and people, there was brushback for that. Like, he 100% deserved a vote, but he didn't deserve to be the MVP. But if you put him in your top 10, it's completely reasonable. So I don't know. It's a little bit surprising, and I don't know what type of computer they're using.
They really need, maybe they should use the Splinter next year instead of the shredder.
Yeah,
I don't
right,
know.
Yeah.
That's such a bad joke.
Good job.
No, it's great. We're in that range for Ninja Turtles, so we're good.
And it sets up that narrative at the end of the year. Yoan Moncada came out of nowhere, and now he's the MVP type of thing for the national media, whatever. But one thing I do have a problem with is Ricky Renteria. Lineup construction is terrible always, but this is the year where I think that Ricky Renteria batting Tim Anderson seventh could work. It should work because Tim Anderson is probably the seventh best hitter on this team, which is great. Amazing. I don't think Tim Anderson is a 366 on base guy where he pretty much hit that. Where do you put Tim Anderson firstly in the lineup, and then who's your leadoff guy for this Chicago White Sox team?
So it's one of the bigger questions, I think, who we lead off with. I've seen some people suggest like the outside the box, you know, method of just using Grandal there. I've seen Moncada. I don't want Moncada leading off. Like, I'd prefer him to
not at all
hit second on the south side for the next 10 seasons. That's like what I would prefer. So I'm not going to be surprised if they put Robert there right away. And I understand the argument, like, oh, put him at 7, put him at 8, let him get his feet wet, let him just like play defense in center field. But I mean, if it's not like, you know, one of those guys and Madrigal's not up to start the year, like, I don't know who it is, you know, and I could totally see, which would be terrible. Like, you know, we watched the opener and they got Leury Garcia at second base leading off with Abreu hitting third, like against a right-hander. And you're just like, want to bang your head off against the wall because it's just, you know, you have such better hitters now. It's one of, that's actually, you know, a storyline that, you know, I don't know, like spring training lineups aren't really conducive to what they're going to do in the regular season, but it is something where it's like a big question as to what they're going to do. I don't prefer Anderson up there either, but you know, if you had to do it like early, at least he would see a lot of fastballs, which, you know, if he's hitting first with Moncada behind him, he'll see fastballs. I think the only way he ever gets a 350 on base percentage again is if he hits 330, which he's probably not going to do. So I agree with you there. He does fit better down at 7, but I don't know. I mean, if they add a veteran second baseman, you know, like a Brian Dozier or somebody like that, maybe it is Anderson to start. I don't know. But I would probably go with Luis Robert and just go with it and see what happens.
He's James Fox here with us on the score for just another minute or so. And is Anderson the one where it's, if you had to lock in one person at one spot in the lineup and kind of build from there, is it having Moncada at second and just let the chips fall where they may, but the one person that you would absolutely lock into a certain part of the lineup first, who would that be?
It would be Moncada for me at 2. I like having the best player at 2. So that's just what I would do. And then 3, 4, 5 is kind of interchangeable. So I don't think Jose Abreu is the everyday three hitter, like on a World Series contender or anything anymore. But look, he mashed against left-handed pitching last year. Now, so did Yasmani Grandal, and so did Edwin Encarnacion, and so did Eloy Jimenez. So, I mean, you can kind of put those guys in any order behind Moncada, and it would be fine, I think. You know, I would prefer Eloy Jimenez at third and, you know, start locking him into more, the most plate appearances possible. But, you know, I think they do have some room to maneuver. But Moncada is, I think, the most important guy. So, yeah, I would stick him too and leave him there.
Now, the Twins are reworking the trade out there with Boston. So they got a little worse yesterday with the trade not going through, not having Maeda. Seems like they might be working through some difficulties on that trade. Hopefully they are out of this trade, because having Maeda on the team makes them that much better. One of their weak spots is their starting pitchers. For the White Sox to compete with the Twins, do you think they need to do anything else? Or do you think, as currently constituted, the White Sox and the Twins can battle for that AL Central, along, you put the Indians in there too, for the AL Central crown?
I think the Twins are the best team. I think they should be the favorite, but I also don't think they're going to hit, you know, 325 homers or whatever they did last year. And their pitching, honestly, like, isn't great. And look, you could make the same argument about the White Sox. So the thing that I've said is, like, the Twins are the better team, but the White Sox have the ability to be the way better team because they have their upside is so high. Like, if Luis Robert, you know, breaks onto the scene and he's, you know, like a Juan Soto type guy where he's a superstar, like, right away, and then all these other guys, like, continue to do what they're doing, like, yeah, the White Sox can win the division. Nobody should pick them, but they shouldn't be entering the season thinking that they're a third-place team by any means. So I don't think there's, like, another move that you can go make that's, like, the answer to Josh Donaldson or, like, Kenta Maeda. And while Kenta Maeda is, like, pretty good and he's an innings eater and he's something they need, if he's starting a Tuesday night at Guaranteed Rate Field, like, and, you know, the White Sox have one of the better offenses in the American League, I don't think that should scare anybody either. So I do think they're – you know, they're going to compete with the Twins. And, I wouldn't count out Cleveland just because they have really good pitching, but I think Cleveland's going to dump off assets as the season goes along.
James, appreciate the time. As always, good to get to talk to you. That is James Fox of Future Sox. Follow him on Twitter at JamesFox917. If you're just a fan of baseball in this town and you're not following James, you're doing yourself a disservice. So make sure to give him a follow.
Yeah, all the folks down there at Future Sox. I read an article about Neil Kotz. I think Ken Solichek. Mm-hmm. I'm saying his name right. He wrote it. So check out Future Sox. Follow those guys. They're smart. They're not, you know, big time, you know, only White Sox homers type of thing. They give objective opinions about the White Sox without being too fan based. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're journalists. They do their job well. And it's great to see those guys and the whole Sox community coming together for this great season. We're going to have an excellent season. F the Twins. Sorry, I just had to bring
that up. Is that just how you're going to, like, is that the period to every sentence for you this year?
I mean, it's always been like that, but man, Twins,
even more
Twins
than
fans
ever.
Are extra spicy because they won one division. Right. Extra. Like, talking down to us as if they can.
Right.
Man, I wish I would.
Yeah, if there's one like team that I hate in this division more than any other, it is 100% the Twins.
I think I hate the Royals more, especially now that they have Mike Matheny.
Yeah.
And hitting my man Timmy Anderson last year. And I'm glad that Phil Meyer got kicked off the Royals when Alex Gordon went back.
Yeah.
Heath Phil Meyer was the one who was talking smack to Tim Anderson after he reached first base, and now he's released. So my rankings of teams I hate in the AL Central, the Royals, the Twins, the Indians, and I don't even hate the Tigers, even when they're good, because Miguel Cabrera, he's great. Right.
And their uniform is amazing.
I haven't changed.
Yeah.
And ever.
It's great.
And ever, Jerry.
And ever. Yeah. For me, it's the Twins because of the... I just have too much PTSD, yeah, from that era. Guys, if I see a highlight of Nick Punto bloop one more ball over Paul Konerko's head, I am going to break something.
Tanny used to do a thing where he would show me the White Sox scouting report on Jason Kubel and just hand me a blank sheet of paper. Because they couldn't pitch to Jason Kubel or Lou Ford or any of those. Odo Cabrera when he was there.
If Jock Jones slaps one more ball off of home plate in the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome and gets a single out of it, especially, I swear he would do it when the bases were loaded too.
Mm-hmm.
It drove me absolutely crazy.
And Jason Kubel always had that picture on MLB.com with the biggest S-eating grin ever. And it was just the most annoying thing looking through and looking at his lineup list. And
he looked like a bad guy from a kid's movie.
Absolutely.
All right. That's our producer, Sean Anderson. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until noon at 11. We'll switch back to some XFL talk with Kevin Boyard from CBS Sports. But we got more baseball to talk the rest of this hour. Sox and a little bit of Cubs. Barry Rosner wrote a column. He had some time to speak with Theo Epstein. Some interesting quotes in there. We'll get to all that before 11 o'clock. We're here with you until noon on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Does your youth hockey team want to play in front of thousands? Make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Visit chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn more. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We're here with you until noon. So I had to look up in the break because I like torturing myself. Jock Jones's career splits against the White Sox. And 296 hitter, 340 on base, 500 slugging for an 840 OPS. And I'm just perusing for teams that he had you know, a good sample of games against, it actually looks like the best OPS. So it doesn't surprise me that much.
I mean, his career OPS was 775.
Yeah, like he hit well against the Indians as well, 850 against the Indians, 840 against the Sox, 773 against the Royals for OPS. So, yeah.
He hit his average against the Royals. So, yeah, it's...
White Sox and Indians, not fans of Jock Jones.
Him, Torii Hunter... I'm sure Jason Kubel hit like 1,000. Lou Ford was great.
Your guy, Justin Less, yes?
Ugh. Jason Kubel's OPS against the White Sox in 72 games started, 894 his career, 777.
Exactly.
That's ridiculous.
Chris Tannehill's blank sheet scouting report.
That's such a good bit. All right, I know you mentioned when we were speaking with James, the second base bad hole, if you want to call it that, or just kind of the second base, somebody's got to fill this spot. Where are you thinking about what the White Sox should do with the second base position?
Let's look at the people who are competing for it. Danny Mendick, career year down in AAA last year. Mm-hmm. He's fine. Then you have a guy who's, I think, more of a utility guy, and Lurie Garcia, probably the odds on favorite to be the guy at second base to start this year.
Right.
And then a guy that you picked third overall, I believe, third overall in the draft a couple years ago. And why would you send Nick Madrigal down to AAA? What is he going to do in AAA that he'll get better at being a Major League Baseball player? Seeing inferior pitching down there, how he'll get better at being a Major League player. Some will say the confidence that goes along with being a good hitter down there, and you can carry that along with being in the major leagues. But if he's the best option, damn the service time things. I'm always against service time manipulation.
Sure.
But especially for a guy like Nick Madrigal, because he's not that guy that's going to command a huge contract at the end of the 6 years that he's with your club.
Mm-hmm.
And truth be told, I think he's a guy that you could sign to the pre-arb deals that they've signed already with Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez and other players like Sale and Quintana. So if he wins the job outright, if he's the best option in spring training, you see him with the glove and the hitting, bring him up to the major league club. No time to mess around with anything. You need as many wins as you can gather. And if he's the best option, Lurie Garcia would be perfect as a fourth outfielder and a fifth infielder.
Sure.
The utility guy to give a guy a blow every once in a while.
Yeah.
And then Danny Mendick, meh.
Whatever.
You know, he had a good year last year in AAA. Congratulations to him. But we're trying to win a division here.
Mm-hmm.
And playing games with service time just so you can gain an extra year with Nick Madrigal is not the move. It's not the move at all. If he's the guy, like everybody tells me, my man Matt Zawoski, Southside Zoe, loves Nick Madrigal. He's in the Nick Madrigal camp. The guy struck out 6 times last year in minors. Bring him up. Have him bat either first or ninth. And give him that taste of the Major League Baseball. I know the White Sox and a lot of other teams don't like to send a guy down once he's been up. But if he does struggle, you have the options to send him back down.
Mm-hmm.
But it sends a clear message to the rest of the guys, the rank and file who are in minor leagues, that says, if you are the best guy, this is a meritocracy. We're going to give you the promotion that you deserve.
Right.
Instead of, we're 7's bigger than 6, and, you know, we like to keep a little money to ourselves, so we like to give jobs to people who didn't deserve it. That morale will go away. Like, I think the Padres did that last year with Fernando Tatis.
Yeah.
Won the job straight out. A shortstop. They were going to send him back down. Manny Machado and Eric Hosmer said, no, that's the best player at shortstop for us. We need him on this team. Same thing with Chris Paddock.
Right.
And they had great rookie years. It sends a message back down to the rest of the people down in single A. Man, if I grind, if I'm the best, they're not going to be playing with me. This is a real organization. This is the organization I want to play for, because I know if I do my thing, I'm going to be on the major league squad. And that's what the White Sox need to send that message. And they can send it easily with a guy that is not a great player.
Right.
He'll be a good player. I think he projects to a good player. Others think he's going to be a Jose Altuve. And speaking of Jose Altuve, if he is that guy, I'll gladly pay him what Jose Altuve made with the $23 million a year.
Sure.
I'll gladly pay him. But the second base salaries are not like the salaries of a star third baseman, a star shortstop, star center fielder. They're a little lower than the average guy. So you won't have to pay him that much if he does become that guy. And you'll gladly pay him that much if he does become that guy.
312-644-6767-670-11 on the text line. To further your point about you need to get those wins when you can, in the first week of the season, you're in Cleveland for three. Then you go to Boston for three. And then after three, and then you come home, and after three against Seattle, you get Minnesota in town for three. All within the first couple weeks of the season. And also just kind of a side note, looking at this April schedule, boy, there's a lot of Kansas City. Three series against the Royals in April.
Let's eat.
That's the other thing. You need to be able to take advantage of those Royals series, which maybe you don't need Nick Madrigal to do, but it definitely doesn't hurt as well.
I think they lost the series to Kansas City last year overall. Yeah. I believe it was 10-9 when Kansas City won. And they won series with Houston and the Yankees. So at the top of the league, they're competing, battling. Like you said, they need to take care of the also-rans, especially this year with the Kansas City Royals way down in rebuild mode and bum-ass Mike Matheny being the manager. Take it to him. Throat step in time.
He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We'll take time out. I got a couple quotes from Theo Epstein that I want to read. As you know, we'll give a little bit of time to the Cubs as well, even though they're still not doing a whole lot. Still don't have any movement on a Chris Bryant trade. We'll talk about that and why Theo might have had a better idea than we did, or thinking far enough ahead about what this offseason would have looked like. He's Herb. I'm Rick. We're here with you till noon on The Score.
We have to try to create a winning culture for now. You know, not what was a winning culture a few years ago. And I think that we're intent on doing better in that area. All of our players are. They all want to be part of something that's the best culture in baseball. That should be the standard.
That's Cubs President of Baseball Operations, Theo Epstein. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp. We are here with you until noon. We'll switch back to the XFL at the top of the hour. But our guy, Barry Rosner at the Daily Herald, wrote an interesting column with a lot of quotes from Theo Epstein. And just want to go through at least a couple of them of just kind of, I don't know if it's resetting necessarily, but you know, just where the Cubs are in this offseason. We're all, I wouldn't say necessarily on pins and needles at this point, because I think we've all kind of been desensitized to the waiting of a Chris Bryant deal or Wilson Contreras, whoever is going to move, although it sure seems like Chris Bryant at this point. And just that Theo kind of knew that this was going to be happening at some point, and I guess just logically in the course of a successful rebuild, it ends up happening. So let me give you a couple of the quotes here from Theo with Barry. This is on the luxury tax and repeater taxes that could be coming with just maintaining a very high payroll. We knew once the CBA came out, there'd be some real challenges toward the end of it for big market teams that had developed a lot of good players getting expensive through arbitration, had added through free agents on top and had won. If you look at Boston, if you look at the three teams that won in 16, 17, 18, the Cubs, the Astros, and the Red Sox, it hasn't been a real active winner for any of us in terms of adding players. And part of that's the reality of the CBA. We knew it would be challenging, and ultimately there would be a choice between maximizing the moment of 20 and 21 or taking a longer-term view and trading out of that position a little bit while still trying to win. So I don't think it's anything earth-shattering that we maybe didn't already know or at least assume going into this offseason. But it really is the concept of when the Cubs started the rebuild, the goal was sustained success in getting a World Series. And obviously the more important of those two, they got accomplished. They got that 2016 World Series. Mm-hmm. But as the Cubs try to sustain the success, I think the question has to be asked, what's success at that point? And I think that's where the rubber's meeting the road a little bit of what fans are thinking versus what maybe the front office is thinking.
Yeah, and Barry wisely, when the Chris Bryant thing was brought up initially in 2015, was the 7 is greater than 6 thing. this is my problem with the Cubs and their whole thing. It is year five, and they're thinking about trading Chris Bryant after year five. So what was it all for? If we're just going to be, hey, we can't afford this guy, even though we're keeping him for an extra year, what was it for? If the seven is greater than six, let's let that play out. You don't have to trade Chris Bryant. He could stay on the team. He's still a top player, despite even despite what the Shredder says, that he's not a top 10 third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem what I have with Theo, the Cubs in general. Just if at the time in 2015 they thought that this is going to be sustained success and that, you know, the seven's greater than six, are they happy where they are right now?
Yeah.
The fact that they did that, the fact that they won the grievance, which everybody expected them to do, maybe a little bad blood with the player now.
Right.
Are they happy with where they are now that they've done that thing? That they've, the team doesn't seem to be competing for the NL Central, even though they're still good. They didn't do anything this offseason. A team that won 85 games last year, mid-80s games last year, is bringing back the same people. How's that getting better? Like, the Brewers got incrementally better.
Mm-hmm.
Cardinals stayed pretty much the same. And then the Cincinnati Reds are coming for you. They'd had a busy offseason. So how did the Cubs get better? Are they going to be competing for the NL Central? And largely, are they going to be competing for a championship? Because this is what they were supposed to be for.
Right.
Having these core, young core players relatively cheap so you can go for championships. And they're not even the pitcher. Was it all worth it? And by the way, go out and get yourself a Daily Herald. Go out and get yourself a Tribune, a Sun-Times, whatever you like. A physical paper. Because journalism, like Barry Rosner does, is should be paid for. And those guys should be kept on a roster. You see what's happening with the Chicago Tribune, letting good people like David Hall, Greg Kot, others go.
Yeah.
Because bad management. Can't afford them anymore because of our whole society of getting information for free.
Right. Well, it's on the internet. It's also just maximize your profits. It's not even as it's of course about, you know, getting journalism for free, but it's also them as, you know, whatever the parent corporation wanting to maximize profits over putting out a good product or the best quality product. It's still a good product, but not as good as it could easily be.
There's nothing better than if you're on a commute, grabbing yourself, I used to do it in the back of the day, grabbing the Sun-Times, the tabloid style, and reading the sports, go from back to forward, and getting exactly what you wanted out of that paper. And the physical copy feels great.
Right.
Just, you know, crossing your legs while you're on the metro coming in. You need to support these guys and women.
And as much as some people tend to think that the media doesn't really serve a purpose except for trying to, quote-unquote, get the team or whatever organization it is in different aspects of life, you do need journalism because whether you want to believe it or not, quote unquote, the media is here to try and represent you and get you the information that would not be out there otherwise. You think everything we hear about, you know, interpersonal dynamics within organizations, sports or otherwise, is going to be out there, like just volunteered by corporations or by teams, if there weren't reporters with their feet on the ground trying to find these things out themselves? No. So support your local journalism. If you're listening on the radio.com app and maybe you're in a different market as well, in your local market, pay for your papers, whatever media there is. And also, since you care about Chicago, do the same thing here. That's what we all do. That's what we hope for is things become more and more specialized. There's such good stuff out there from a lot of different outlets. So give yourself the opportunity to learn as much as you can. 312-644-6767. 670-11 on the text line. Brad is in Lake Zurich, and Brad's on the score.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How's it going?
Going great, Brad. How are you feeling?
Doing all right. Touching back on that subject when you guys were talking about Theo and how he knew how difficult 20 and 21 was going to be, I understand the whole money concept and wanting to stay under the luxury tax, but I think a big problem that isn't talked about, and as great as a manager as Joe Maddon was, there is a serious lack of developing those, like, mid-tier prospects that we had. Elmora, Hap, Russell when he was here. You know, those were the guys that are expected to make jumps that never made jumps. We're expecting that every year after year, and it's kind of the same story that, well, these guys worked hard over the winter, and they were working on this, and this, and you never saw those developments where those three people specifically were making the jumps that they were supposed to be making. A lot of these holes that we have wouldn't be holes, as well as, you know, with the pitching and just the lack of pitching and getting new prospects in the pipeline and developing them throughout the years as well.
You're 100% right on that. The fact that's what is required. That's why throughout a team's rebuild, you should still be, or a team being successful, you should also kind of, even if it's just out of the side of one eye, keep an eye on the farm system. Even when, you know, remember for years with both of these teams, with the Cubs and the White Sox, it was always paying attention to the minor leagues. What was happening? You know, Chris Bryant and Albert Almora and Kyle Schwarber working their way through the minor leagues, all those guys. And then now that they're in the majors, you need that next wave so that you're not paying, not even necessarily top dollar, but free agent money to get a replacement level guy that'll be a bench guy and someone that'll fill in, or guys for your bullpen or whatever. So that way, then you can focus a lot more of your money to stay under the luxury tax, just to stay under the luxury tax, focus that on your core players.
The Red Sox paid $14 million last year for the luxury tax. It's a drop in the bucket for these teams.
And just to give it a little bit, because the luxury tax is kind of a hard concept for a lot of people to understand. In your first year in the luxury tax, you pay a 20% fee. So
over
the actual dollar. So for every dollar you are over, you pay an extra 20 cents. To put it in comparison to basketball, in the NBA, in your first year in the tax, you pay dollar for dollar, 100%. And there are teams that are still willing to do that in the NBA. Now, there aren't a ton of them, but even so, the teams that are very good are not crying poor. Or the teams that have, you know, the just insanely rich owners are willing to pay that type of tax to win.
Yeah.
If it was a 20% tax and in a second year a 30% tax,
everybody would do it.
Everybody would do that. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of teams would do that in the NBA. And everybody is scared to death of this in MLB.
To counter that just a little bit, because, I mean, NBA, you got 15 guys, and there's also a max contract that you can have. So, you look at the highest payroll right now in the NBA, it's $138 million, and that's Portland Trailblazers, where you see Mike Trout signing a contract for $420 million by himself. So, I mean, I think it's just a little bit different, at least with the largeness of the contracts that can be signed with.
But also the tiers, now for us to not get too minutiae on this, there are tiers for how much you pay. Like if you are between this number and this number over, you pay this much per dollar. In the NBA, those numbers are much smaller. Like I think it's like 0 to $5 million. You pay dollar for dollar. If it's like 5 to whatever, then you pay like $1.50 or something like that. Where in baseball, it's like 0 to $20 million, 20 to $40 million. So those are, you know, those numbers are bigger to try and make up for some of that difference of just number of people on your payroll and the size of contracts. So that's how they try and balance it out a little bit. And also just the staggeringly smaller number in terms of percentage that they're paying. But it all comes back to, in both instances, valuing winning versus valuing money in your pocket.
Last year, the luxury tax bill for teams, there's four teams that paid luxury tax. The Yankees at $21 million. The Red Sox, at $19 million. The Astros at $4 million, the Cubs at $1 million. One damn million. That's it. So, like, all this stuff that's happening with the Cubs, Red Sox trying to trade off Mookie Betts and David Price, it's four drops in the bucket. Yeah, and there's eventually, if you're a repeater, you get, you know, draft position moved and such.
Yeah, if you're not in the top six of a given draft in which you're a repeater, your draft pick goes down 10 slots.
Yeah.
So let me give you an NBA example just to show how ridiculous teams willing to win are doing this. Now, this is the most extreme example, mind you. The Oklahoma City Thunder, for 2018. So when they traded for Paul George, they had just the luxury tax bill, not the payroll in and of itself, just the luxury tax they were paying was $150 million over what they were paying for the actual salary. That's just the luxury tax. So that's something to keep in mind as well. Now, it's not the perfect comp, but it's just an example. All right, we're going to switch back to the XFL and speak with Kevin Boylard, for NFL writer for CBS. Follow him on Twitter at 24/7, Kevin Boylard. Just go over a lot of what he saw yesterday compared to what we saw and just how viable is the XFL moving forward. We'll talk about that in the last hour. He's Herb Lawrence. I'm Rick Camp, and this is The Score.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.